Hello, hello, friends and enemies. Hi, everyone. Hey, 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 how's it going?
Hey, out there.
Oh, goddamn. Yeah, been thinking about what I should say at the top of the podcast. Does this count as a platform, this tiny little podcast no one gives a shit about? I don't know, man.
I've been reflecting on that today as well. And maybe.
I guess.
It seems so insignificant.
It does. I guess it's always.
And I swear we do have 5 listeners. So I don't know.
You know what? I feel like our numbers are probably. I can't say I pay a lot of attention, but I feel like they're at like the lowest ever. So we might have 4 listeners. And to those 4 listeners, like. Oh my God. I apologize for I don't know, being American. The fact that the United States will never allow for peace.
I'm not sure you owe anyone an apology for that.
For the industrial war complex machine, you know? Jesus Christ. I do feel kind of responsible, but it's I feel like the number of people that want this is so small. And they just do not give a fuck, right? That's my impression. I don't really have anything profound to say. I just feel we've dealt with the morality of this before, where it's something really serious is going on. Let's talk about unsolved mysteries. And today, even though we're already late, I was I just feel like I'm tap dancing for pennies on the tech of the Titanic or something. It's
No, I know what you mean.
It's is this really the time? Is this really the time? Is this really what we're doing? What we're doing right now? But Liz, what are you going to do instead? You know, I guess just go down with the ship because.
Yeah, I think this is something a lot of people are grappling with. I've seen it over and over again where people are like, I'm just doing my stupid little hobbies or my dumb little job. And it feels so hollow because of everything that's going on in the world. And goddamn, but there's nothing else you can do. But on the other hand, you feel powerless. Like, what am I going to do?
I called the White House today. The White House comment line is very bitterly hilariously only open Tuesday through Thursday in the middle of the day because they're very interested in what we have to say. Yeah. So there's a very small window of time, but I did actually, get to talk to someone. I'm sure.
A real
I'm
president.
I'm sure that went right into the president.
I'm sure.
They took that in. They were a woman called in from Minneapolis to say that, these are war crimes and she's never going to vote for you again. So. And then he looked out that back window that you always saw in Scandal and he shed a single tear. I'm in a really dark place and none of this really has anything to do with me. I just feel really fucking guilty.
Yeah.
And we keep making the podcast because we love our listeners and they're sweetie pies and we do it for them. But every so often I'm just what are we doing? And today is one of those days. So I just kind of want to acknowledge that before we go into our usual fucking nonsense.
It feels weird to say nothing, right? To not acknowledge that the world is a dark and scary place and there's a lot of horrible shit going on and we're just sitting here talking about some dumb TV shows no longer on. So this is something. It's inadequate, but I don't know what else to do. I don't know what else to say. But it feels worse to say nothing. So... yeah, we're gonna I don't know where I was going with that, but
yeah, I hear you.
I feel like our listeners know us at this point, right? If you are still listening to this stupid podcast, you are probably very dedicated and
you
we
must
know
be.
You we this know like goddamn. All of our listeners by name, basically. That's how small we are. And so I think our listeners know where we stand on important issues, and that goes without saying. So know that we're, where we're at, I feel like, because you listen to the show after fucking 8 seasons. So.
Which is wild.
Yeah. That's, I guess, our very sad statement.
Okay, okay. Oh, hi, dogs. Okay. So our Patreon payout this month is $318.01. And so I would love to hear from any Palestinians in the five, activists in the five. Where should we send our $318.01? Come to our Facebook group and tell us where you think that would make the best impact.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll feel a tiny bit better about recording this dumb
what
thing
we're doing here
at the end of the world. Because, God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Okay. So that's that, I guess. Oh my, like, then it's like, how do you even, like, go to the next? And it's like, well, now for some updates.
Yeah, like, let's talk about the stupid Halloween theme stuff we've
Christ.
Done.
Christ. Yeah, I would like to thank, well, I mean, I thank our patrons for this money that we're going to give to some good cause. But also, it enabled us to do some fun. Yeah, God damn it. Okay, we're gonna try to move on. So it enabled us to do some fun things in October, which is always our busy season. And there are a couple of things that we haven't talked about yet. One is that we went on a ghost tour that was led by, well, it was pitched as that it was led by a nun, and it was through Minneapolis Community Ed, even though it took place in St. Paul. Look, there's many things about the world I don't understand, and that's a minor one. And it was a historical reenactor as a famous nun, Sister Celeste from St. Paul. And so she led us around. It was a bus tour and showed us various haunted sites. She showed us her own grave. She was very, very funny, actually. She was hilarious. Samantha and I commented later that we're pretty sure people got through the entire tour without realizing she wasn't really a nun.
Which even though there were clues along the way the whole time.
Even though she was referring to herself being dead for like 100 years and stuff. Even though we looked at her grave.
Her cousin built the St. Paul Cathedral, which is several hundred years old.
I guess people were just like, oh, wow, great for him. That must have been really impressive at the next family gathering. It's like, oh, I built a cathedral. But she was super funny. We did learn some stuff that we had not learned before. I learned
348. That's how old the St. Paul Cathedral is.
Yeah. So
these people thought that she was 300 years old.
Maybe they just weren't really paying attention. I don't know.
I think so. I don't know.
And also, I was like, I haven't met a lot of nuns, I'll admit, right now. But I wouldn't expect a nun to have like really great comic timing. Like, that would be a surprise to me.
I think that was our first clue. She was cracking jokes, then doing bits, like, from moment one.
Yeah, despite the, like, you know, habit and such. I would also like to complain about Friend of the Pod Arden, because there was a quiz after the ghost tour. You know, look, I was very tired that day, and I swear at some point I was like, Liz, it's okay if you don't really, like, pay attention so hard and like remember every detail. It's okay, you know. And then it's like there was literally a quiz, so it like kind of wasn't okay, you know.
Yeah, but you copied off of my quiz, which was to your detriment because both failed. And Friend of the Pod Arden won the glow in the dark rosary, getting all the questions right.
This glow in the dark rosary, which for some reason I like really wanted. It's like the most competitive I've ever felt in my life. I really wanted to get it and put it in our shadow box here in the recording studio. And I don't know. Yeah, I shouldn't have copied off Samantha because she doesn't know her popes either. And me just writing the Pope for one of the answers didn't seem like enough information. So I ended up writing Pope George, which guess what? It was never a Pope. It was Gregory.
I had the G right. I knew it was started with G.
Look, he was the Pope. Like, at the time, you would have just called him the Pope, right? Like, that should be enough.
Yeah, well, it wasn't, and we lost.
We lost. But it was very enjoyable. I really liked that. We did some interesting things this year. One of them was we went to a ballet inspired... Well, I thought it was all inspired by Frankenstein, but it turns out it was multiple things. So, like, one act was about Frankenstein. This was put on by the James Sewell Ballet.
Real quick, before we move on to this one, if you are local, you can take a tour from Sister Celeste.
Oh, yeah.
If you go, it's Celestial Tours. If you want to find her on Instagram, it's _ Celestial Tours. And she also has a website. She did this tour through Community Ed, but you can just book tours with her directly, I'm pretty sure. She used to write tours and do tours at the Wabasha Street Caves, which I don't know if they went out of business, but the caves are up for sale or they have been purchased.
Oh, right.
And the tour business there closed down. So when she explained that when they closed down the Wabasha Street Caves for tours and put them up for sale, she went solo basically and started her own tour company. And that is the Celestial Tours. And honestly, I think her tour was one of the best tours I've ever been on, ghost tours. So I would highly recommend it. I think she has several different themes. Like there's a gangster tour she mentioned, probably some others. So you should definitely check her out if you're local or if you're traveling through Minnesota.
Yeah, I thought she was super funny. I would do any one of her tours. I think you would just learn really interesting stuff.
I learned so much. And she, like, her timing was really good, like we said. Like, it was just very entertaining. She's obviously very skilled at this. Has been doing it for many years, clearly, at the Wabasha Street Cave. So
I can't believe I
highly recommend.
Took one of those tours.
I know. And I don't know.
I always put it off and now I can't do it. So
yeah, I don't know if they'll reopen for that or the new owners will or what they'll do, but it's a bummer.
Okay, back to the ballet. So the whole thing was called In the Shadows. The first act was inspired by Frankenstein, and that was called Unfashioned Creature. And then there was an intermission, and then there was a part that was about Poe, and then there was, like, a couple other things, and then it ended with, like, zombies. You know how you're at the ballet, and it, like, the last part is ballet zombies? It was very good. We have now seen a guy do ballet while wearing a Fresno Nightcrawler t-shirt. I don't think everyone can say that. No, it was really good. It was interesting, enjoyable. I can't believe they put on all that work to do two performances. That's super wild to me.
Yeah, that was wild. This was at the O'Shaughnessy at St. Catherine University. I had never been to the O'Shaughnessy. It's a really nice theater, and I really enjoyed the performance. We had great seats also. We were in like the second row, right in the middle. It was fabulous.
They were pretty much dancing just for us, as they should. The O'Shaughnessy had very hilarious random Halloween decorations put up around.
I'm not sure who was in charge of the decoration, but
around the, like,
it was giving train museum Halloween.
It really
party.
Was, but it's almost like a step below that, which is shocking to say, because some of it was just like a mannequin wearing a ski hat. Or
it was like but it wasn't a full mannequin. I think what made it Halloween was that it was just a torso
wearing a ski hat.
Yeah, so that's why it was spooky.
The reason I brought it up, so yeah, there'd just be like a lantern painted like an eyeball, and you're kind of like, all right, got it. The reason I brought it up is because at one point I overheard this kid asking his parents, like, why is there just this random like mannequin leg here, just like a leg? And his parents were like, oh, don't worry, that's just pretend for Halloween. Like, you know, it's not a real leg, kid. And the kid was like, pretending to be what? And
that's a good question.
I feel like I'll never forget it because it's really hard. I feel like it's really hard to explain, like, oh, for this holiday that we have here, we like to decorate with fake severed limbs. So it's a leg, it's a fake leg pretending to be a real leg that was like hacked off of someone's body and now is just here at the ballet as decoration.
Yeah, exactly. But that's why is that hard to explain?
Yeah, you're right. I was just like, wow, glad I don't have kids. And then I sat down. I would definitely be interested in seeing other things that the James Sewell Ballet did. I thought it was a really good job. One of my previous recommendations, I don't even remember how long ago, was a place in Minneapolis called Rethink Tailoring, which doesn't actually offer classes anymore. So that you know, recommendation. You can just throw that away. But they did the costumes for the Frankenstein part of the ballet from like upcycled other costumes. And so they're sort of like patchworked together in this like Frankenstein way. I just thought that was very cool. That's actually how I heard about it in the first place. So that's another fun. Do you remember doing fun things? That's a fun thing that we did. And actually,
seems like a distant memory at this point, but yeah,
I have the, I left the program on the podcasting table to remind me that we still needed to talk about this. And on the back of the program is actually Sister Celeste at the Celeste of St. Paul Hotel and Bar.
And yes, there's a hotel in St. Paul called Hotel Celeste, and I think she's partnered with them on certain things.
She does tours for them.
Yeah, and she's in some of their marketing materials dressed, obviously, as Sister Celeste. And I just think that's very funny.
And so sometimes I'm like, wow, this is a really small town. Like, it's not. But sometimes you just are like, oh, this program. Like, we literally know who this fake nun is. Hey, Samantha, look at this fake nun we just met the other week. She's on the back of this program. I'm pretty sure Dangerous Lens, I would say, those sort of coincidences are communication from the spirit world. So. Something to keep in mind.
It's Sister Celeste.
Was there any other? We went and we did the fever candlelight thing again, which was at a church this year. God damn, do they start that thing on time?
Which and usually, it is exactly 1 hour long and not a second longer.
Second longer. So just with the like parking and whatever, look, I realize that this is on me and this is my fault, but we were exactly 5 minutes late to this performance. They were already like well into that first song. Maybe we missed one. Like five minutes. Okay, fine. That's on me. That's my fault. I was late. But then like when, you know, I forget when it started at 8:30, when 9:30 struck on everybody's phone, that performance was done.
We were
You got 1 hour of music and that was it.
If you've never been to one of these, if you didn't hear us talking about this last year, this was a string quartet that plays Halloween music, themed Halloween music, surrounded by candles, like fake candles, but candles, in a pretty venue. And it's put on by this website called Fever, which does a lot of events. We did it last year.
Mostly like music by fake candles. That's like...
Yeah.
They kind of found a way to make going to see a string quartet seem more Instagrammable. Because maybe if you bought a bunch of Facebook ads and you were like, come see a string quartet, people would be like, no thanks. And then it's like, come see music by candlelight. You're like, okay.
And what I will say is if you've never gone to one, I do think it would be worth it. It was fun, but it was exactly the same the second time.
It was
time.
So
and
similar.
There were some minor differences, like, but I think they were mainly like it was a different. It was in a different place. It was in a church this time.
There's different musicians, but they played basically the same set list.
The crowd was a little better, but that's not something you can control. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would need to do it a third time, but I did enjoy it as much as I did the first time, but it was exactly the same. Yeah. They could have used more candles, is what I want to say about this year's performance. There was just a little bit of, there was a lot of candles, but they were mainly like behind them, and I sort of think they could have filled that fucking sanctuary with candles.
When we walked in there, exactly 5 minutes late.
It was very dark.
It was so dark.
I ran into a chair.
It was pitch black in there. And the whole point is that there are candles. It's called candlelight.
There were not that many candles.
There were not that many candles. Not like last year. It's a cool place to see a show. Apparently, you know, one of our friend's mom saw that was like very scandalous that they were having Halloween music at the church, even though it was like a cello. Satan's cello, I suppose you could say. It didn't strike me as scandalous when I booked it or when we planned going or anything.
The Methodists clearly did not care since they lent their church for this. And then they probably brought them some money. I don't know. Whatever.
I'm sure they were just rented out the space. They had a great parking lot. It was a good...
It was a beautiful facility. Yeah, it was a beautiful place.
We didn't catch on fire being in the church. I consider that a plus.
Nope, we didn't.
And we got to hear some lovely music, and just the second you were like settled in, really enjoying yourself, it was over.
You had to leave.
It's time to go home. Oh, we didn't talk about our book club Halloween party at all.
Oh, we didn't.
And I just wanted to tell everyone that you went as Mad Cow Disease. So this year, for the first time, the book club that Samantha runs, which is how I know her, actually, we had a Halloween party. And we decided that the costumes for the party would be based on books that we've read over the years. So originally, when Samantha started this, it was a true crime book club. It was the Twin Cities True Crime Book Club. But we got kind of burned out on that because it's like so grim and depressing. So at some point, we just started reading like batshit stuff, like just weird stuff.
And just now, whatever we felt like that was kind of weird.
Yeah. So now it's called Morbid Weirdos. So it was things from all of these years of reading these weird books that we drew our costumes. And you may recall, if you are a longtime listener, that there was a period of time where Samantha was reading everything she could get her hands on about mad cow disease after we read a book about cannibalism, which was both about cannibalism and humans, basically saying that no culture has ever regularly practiced cannibalism. That's all myths. And then looking at cannibalism in animals. And so that got her really interested in mad cow disease, as you know, you do. So that was her costume. And I really just appreciate that you put the like frowny mouth. So you had like a cow costume. Uh-huh, like a plushy kind of cow costume. But then you put a mouth on the cow so that instead of being like a happy, you know, dairy cow, like, I love life.
It's a mad green cow. Grass.
This cow is like, fuck this. I hate everything. you know, I'm bitter and old.
Onesie that I purchased had a smile and a very happy eyes. And obviously that's not going to work for a mad cow. So I took some white fabric and I applicate it over the mouth, and then I took some black fabric cut in the shape of a frown and I glued that on top of that, and then I took some leftover black fabric and made angry eyebrows and glued those to the eyes, and voila, a mad cow.
It was. And you put some band-aids on there.
I put some band-aids on it,
and
I'm a mad cow disease.
I really, really appreciated it. I went as a literal, like, whole book. I went as the worst.
You had a bit of a different interpretation, yep.
I went as the worst book that the book club has read that we're kind of, like, obsessed with how bad it was, which is this book called The Edge of Wild by D.K. Stone. Don't recommend it. And I made essentially, like, a fleece poncho with the cover of the book. I painted that on the front.
It was a work of art.
And then for the back, I made my own blurb, like the thing that's supposed to sell you on getting the book. Only I quoted Samantha saying, worst book I've ever read. And that just amuses me. That amuses me.
Is there a
picture
on our Instagram? Because we did take a photo.
No, but I'll post one now so people can see you as a blurb on the fake. When I was buying that fleece at Joanne's, the woman cutting my fabric was like, oh, what's your costume? And I was trying to explain it, and she was like, I have never heard of that book. And I was like, well
that's because it's not good.
It's very bad. It's so bad that we read it years ago, and now I'm making costume about how we all hated it. So
we read that book so long ago that there's a lot of people in the book club who have joined since then who never read that book, and yet we talk about it at almost every
constantly meeting. I can't
because
stop.
It's so funny how bad it is. And I'm sure people are sick of us hearing us talk about it, but it,
you know what? They could read the book and then
also I'm never going to stop talking about it.
Don't.
I'm never going to stop talking about it because every time we talk about it, even though we talk about the same thing over and over again, it's never not entertaining to me.
No,
I enjoy talking about it every single time. That's how bad that book was. And let me tell you, if you have not started a book club, with a bunch of weirdos to just read weird books and talk about them. I can't really give you any advice on how to do that or how to find these people because it just sort of organically happened. But if you can do it because we're going on our 7th or 8th year of this book club.
I can't believe it.
And it's been one of the joys of my life is just hanging out with people who are as weird as I am, who have weird niche interests like I do. And it's just fantastic. And you can have a Halloween party where people come dressed as Mad Cow Disease and Marcia Clark from her memoir.
Heather made a great Marcia Clark with the file box to sit on to just replicate. People, I loved seeing people's costumes. Yeah, it is a real, I mean, it, whenever I have to talk to normal people and I realize that I have no idea what normal people talk about or what I'm supposed to say, I'm always like, oh, I wouldn't be having this problem at book club. We had some awards for best costume, funniest costume, and sexiest costume. I know you're surprised Samantha didn't win as a mad cow.
I was really campaigning for sexiest, but
her friend Alexa was dressed as a fly fishing lure from the book The Feather Thief, which I think we've talked about on here because it's a very good book. She won sexiest. Amber was Russian Miss Piggy, because we read a book about making Sesame Street in Moscow called Muppets in Moscow.
That book was bad, but her costume was fantastic.
Her costume was fantastic. Best costume. And then there was a niche, deepest cut award. We read a book called Confidence Women, which was like good, but not great. Like there was, I think we talked about that too.
It was about lady swindlers.
Yeah. Like I like the concept and I like some of the stories, but I feel like the book could have been like a little punchier or something.
It was
but
a little mid. I don't, yeah.
Anyway, one of the confidence women in there like fled with, in a convertible full of her designer dogs. And her book called basically is two Alexas. But anyway, other Alexa dressed as that woman. And it was like, yes. We do need to celebrate this lady swindler and her convertible full of designer dogs.
She had Cocker Spaniels cut out and put on a string that she kind of like carried around. And then she had little stuffed Cocker Spaniels. It was fantastic. And it was a very deep cut. So she earned that award.
I mean, it was something that made an impression with me from that book. I'm glad it made an impression with other people. I designed a really large coloring sheet based on maybe like half of the books that we've read, and it was interesting to see how, like, for each book, like, what stuck out that I could be like, okay, how do I represent this book? And yeah, for that one, I was like, oh yeah, like a convertible and a bunch of dogs.
I think that's all I remember from that book, actually.
Fascinating.
Because it was a little forgettable.
Yeah. Except that I was like, wow, that's really the dream. Okay. That was a lot of waffle, but you know.
Well, we had to get everybody caught up on spooky season. I'm glad spooky season is over. We do so many things, and I'm just kind of like not I'm really ready. A person that can maintain that active social life for very long. And so I'm happy in a way, even though I'm going to miss warm weather, I'm happy in a way that we're coming up to winter because I can kind of take a breather.
I'm so tired. Yeah, that's how you know you did spooky season right, is when you see, because it snowed here, bitches, before Halloween. I just wanted to let you know what life in Minnesota is like. It was like days before Halloween, and there was snow on the fucking ground, like snow that stuck in inches. But anyway, I'm not bitter at all. It's fine. But that if you do spooky season right, when you realize, oh, it's hibernation season, you're like, okay, good. Hand me a heating pad and a hot chocolate. Let's fucking Netflix this.
Yep.
And that's how I feel now. I'm just like drained. We really like did a big, you were hobbling around.
There were a few moments. I had
you're like, why did I agree to do this?
There were a few activities that were more challenging than others, but we made it through. I did declare, you know, and I only have myself to blame because before spooky season, when we were planning and prepping, you, I believe, made the suggestion that we kind of like take it a little easy. And I said, no, I want to quote, go hard, unquote. and we did. And so, and I did. And, you know, it was very fun, but we did go hard. And I think I am ready for hibernation season now.
You were like, I missed summer for this back surgery. We have to really do fall up. And I was like, oh, damn. Okay.
And it turns out recovering from back surgery is kind of hard and makes you easily fatigued and sore. Who knew?
But sometimes your friend has made a shareable calendar full of Halloween activities and you feel weirdly bound to do them.
No, I would say that most of the stuff we did not take a lot of energy. Like we, you know, we went and saw some shows and the ghost tour was on a bus. And so, I, you know, the walking around a train museum is not that strenuous. So we did spooky season right, I would say.
I think we did a really good job this year. congrats to us.
Pass and we've back. Already started planning for next year, so literally it's gonna be even better.
Okay. Wow, we're like so into this. Okay. So we are now on season 8, episode 7 of Unsolved Mysteries. Because this is actually an Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh yeah.
Rewatch podcast. Or just watch podcast, because there's no fucking way I've seen this before.
I have seen this before, I forgot about it, because this is the most forgettable episode I have ever seen.
I think we just have more stuff on our minds. Like, there's a ghost in this episode. I feel like it's not that bad an episode, but I literally watched it today, and my mind is mush. You know, I'm just, like, not holding on to information right now. So I'm going to be talking about, this is actually a wild case for Tom, is it Cutter? Sure. Let's sure. just say it is. He's a dirtbag, honestly, so I don't really care. He also has a mustache, but it doesn't get named. So, because we're going to find out that this guy is trash. So 29-year-old Tom Cutter lived in Rapid City, South Dakota, with his wife, Nancy, and two children. He died under mysterious circumstances on June 28th, 1994. I am getting this straight from Unsolved Mysteries Wiki, everyone. I'm so sorry.
God bless Unsolved Mysteries
Wiki. Yes! Bless the dear souls that have uploaded all this information for us. I believe this was an unexplained death segment, but you know what? I didn't write it down. So his family believes he was murdered, but the police say he committed suicide. I find that very odd that they say he committed suicide because he died at work.
Yeah.
And I was like, did no one consider that this was an accident? But maybe it's just like clearly not. But I never really got an explanation on that.
Yeah. I don't know who would want to die like this. This is
like, oof. I just don't think this is a death you would pick. But also, I mean, I'm like,
I not, sure don't.
I'm not sad about it. But I was also like, did no one just think that maybe this is like an accident? Well, I feel like most workplace deaths are accidental.
Yeah. But I think, isn't the theory, I mean, obviously you're going to get to it, but isn't the theory that he wanted it to not look like a suicide because of insurance money reasons for his family?
I guess, but that's so
there's a whole thing at the end where, like, the insurance company, like, finally paid out because they decided there wasn't enough evidence that it was a suicide.
But also, I guess I just don't understand, like, what that's based on. You know what I mean? Like, when they investigated,
I don't know,
what evidence they find that said, oh, this could be an accident or it could be suicide. We don't know. Like, because I would
there
say
was very little evidence either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's a weird case. So Tom was a forklift driver at Forest Products Distributor, a wood processing plant on the outskirts of Rapid City. It was around 8:30 a.m. on a peaceful summer morning, apparently, just after the shift change, when two workers found Tom's body in the plant yard. And in this reenactment, they do not give a shit. Like, if I was at work and I found my coworker crushed to death under a forklift, I don't know. I might scream. I might show some emotion. But they're really like, oh, look, Tom's dead. They're like annoyed. They're going to have to fill out some paperwork. And like, this is really going to, like, they do not give a shit.
Tom's skull is crushed underneath this equipment.
Guess what, guys? See that corpse over there? That's Tom. Like, they do not give a shit at all. It's kind of odd. Okay. So,
look, we know the acting in Unsolved Mysteries is subpar.
But this is almost, I was almost like, is this an intentional choice? Where they're just like, Tom, who gives a shit? Okay. So his head had been crushed beneath the rear of the forklift. Hang in there. We don't like Tom. You don't know it yet, but we don't like Tom. Okay. The occupational safety. Okay. So OSHA comes in and they say this is an accident, right? You would think. However, the police investigation soon pointed to a chilling scenario. The authorities believe that while Tom was working alone, he loaded at least a ton of lumber onto the forklift, set it into an incline, and jumped from the cab so that he would get crushed by the forklift. But why? Why would he do that?
Yeah, why is a good question.
Some say his suicide is connected to the mysterious disappearance a mere 5 days earlier of 30-year-old Tina Mercati. Tina was originally from Manchester, New Hampshire. She and Tom were casual friends who worked once for the same employer, Black Hills Molding, a wood processing plant. So she doesn't really know Tom that well. They're former coworkers. She recognizes him, right? She probably, like, I don't know, felt safe around him. But she doesn't, like, know him. They're not friends. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's important. So now they are forever linked in this mystery. Because during a 5-day period, one turned up missing and the other turned up dead. So Friday morning, this is before Tom's death, on June 24th, Tina worked the late shift at Black Hills Molding. And her shift ended at 12:30. Well, her shift ends and she goes out and she has a completely flat tire. So she can't drive her car. So she calls her best friend, Vicky Riddle, who's, of course, asleep, wakes her up and is like, you got to come get me because I can't fucking leave work now. Right. And Vicky, being a very good friend, was like, OK, don't worry, I'm going to come pick you up. So thank you, Vicky. However, while she's on the phone with her, she's like, oh, never mind. You don't have to come get me. Tom is here. And Vicky's like, who the fuck is Tom? Yeah. What are you talking about? And she's like, you know Tom, that guy I used to work with. So he doesn't work there anymore. And it's 12:30 in the morning.
Red flag.
And he just shows up.
Yeah.
And so Vicky, who's like half asleep anyway, is like, all right, whatever. Like, I'm glad I don't have to come get you, but that's weird. Right. Unfortunately,
doesn't she tell her to be careful or something?
Probably.
I think so. I feel like I remember that.
God. Anyway, so that's the last anyone ever hears from Tina. She's not even reported missing right away because her husband is just like assumes she'll show up.
That's not normal.
No.
If I didn't come home, my husband would be like 2 seconds late. He would be like, what the fuck?
What is happening? I'm sorry. It wasn't her husband. It was her boyfriend of 11 years and the father of her 3 children.
Okay, same diff.
Same diff. And he was just like, oh, she'll come back soon. I don't know what the fuck that's about because we find out that it's Tom. So that's fucking upsetting anyway. But Saturday morning, Vicky calls Tom and told him about the phone call. And he denied that he was there. He was like, you were probably drunk and you wouldn't know the difference between the names Tom and Ron.
What? Who's Ron?
Yeah, first of all, who the fuck's Ron, Tom? Also, yeah, she was like, I was asleep. I wasn't up partying. I wasn't drinking. Also, she specifically said, Tom, the guy I used to work with, and that's you, bitch. There's not another one. Like, he tried to, like, be like, oh, that must have been someone else. And she was like,
Tom is acting sus as hell.
Who? And then he was forced to admit that, yeah, it actually was him.
Yeah, no shit.
Great look. Great way to get away with crimes. Because he was forced to admit that after it was like, well, no other Tom has like literally ever worked at this place. It's pretty small and there's not that many employees. So it's literally you. And she noticed that he was just like, when he was around, he would like glare at her. He was like real pissed now.
Okay.
So the boyfriend of 11 years hears this and straight up is like, have you been messing around with Tina? Like, you know, have you been seeing my lady behind my back? And I love that this Tom's reaction gives him away, where apparently he was like, no, man, you know me. I would never.
You think, first of all, I don't know you. Second of all, also, you're acting real guilty right now.
Patrick was like, oh, from what I know of this dude, if you accused him of shit, he would fucking fight you. So the fact that he doesn't take a swing at him, essentially, for saying, like, hey, were you banging my lady? And he was just like, me? Who, me? Your buddy Tom? He was like, nope. This guy's lying. Because if he was telling the truth, he would be swinging his fists. That's an amazing tell. Okay. So, and Patrick's explanation for that is just, that's the type of person he was. And you know what? I believe it. So Patrick says that Tom was like, okay, fine. Why don't we go report Tina missing? So they finally go to the police department and report her. But when the police went to check her car, they realized that the reason she had a flat tire was it had been slashed with a knife. So someone did it on purpose. like possibly someone who didn't want her to be able to leave work without a ride and just mysteriously was at a place they had no reason to be at 12:30 in the morning. You know, something like that. So this suggested foul play, perhaps murder. Tom was asked to come in for a police interview and he agreed. He denied giving Tina a ride or even being in the area of her workplace. He said that he could pass a lie detector test about it and that he'd actually been on a softball game that night and that he had given a friend a ride home at 11. Okay, but dude, we're talking about an hour and a half after that. I don't think this town is like so big.
Yeah, where were you in that time, Tom?
that you can't drive your friend home at 11 and then
not an alibi
at 12:30, right? That doesn't work for me. He claimed that as he was driving home, his car, a bronze 1995 Pontiac Le Mans sedan, broke down behind the super duper grocery store. And so that he spent approximately 3 to 4 hours trying to fix the car at the streetlight. And that he never called anyone about it and that he just finally got home at 3:30 in the morning.
All right, Tom.
Like he never told his wife or anything. He just like canoodled with the car and, you know, and then he eventually got home in the middle of the night. What I really like about this reenactment is they were like, they just like took out a map and they were like, okay, show us where your car went down. And I swear there's a moment where he's just like spinning his finger like a child, like, there. Like he just has to like pick a spot because that didn't happen. He's just making it up on the fly. Like, by the super duper grocery store. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was suspicious. Also, they like canvassed the area. Like, did you see a guy for like 3 or 4 hours working on a car under a streetlight? And everybody was like, no, what? Also, his wife narcs on him and says that when he got home, he immediately washed his clothes from the softball game. Like, immediately. In the middle of the night. Which I'm guessing is not normal behavior for him.
He probably fucking never washes his clothes.
I was like, does this man wash clothes ever? Much less like, oh, gotta get my softball uniform in the wash, honey. Certainly not covered in
middle
blood.
Of the night?
Yeah. That he told her that he wanted to get out the dirt and grease that got on him from fixing the car. He also washed his shoes and shoelaces. Police apparently thought that was suspicious. Good for them. However, Nancy said that he often did that. Yeah, all right, Nancy. Don't believe you. During the investigation, he made up this place where the car broke down. Blah, blah, blah. So we hear now from investigator Dean Guffmiller, who I named his mustache. Okay, God, his mustache is so big. It's like the size of my whole head. It's huge. It takes up like a third of his face. I called it make it stop. I just can't handle it.
Please make it stop.
It's so much stash, everybody. The universe was like, no, we don't even want to name this. We just don't want it to exist. But anyway, he is the person that represents the sheriff's department to tell us that things weren't adding up. Because you couldn't figure that out on your own. And that obviously Tom was involved in Tina's disappearance. They learned from Tom's coworkers that he, quote, had a dark side. He didn't really get along with people well. He was described as angry and moody. You know what? People say that about me. That means nothing. Okay, but he did have a criminal record. He'd been previously convicted of burglary and simple assault. I don't know. Oh my God.
You a murderer.
He previously abused drugs and alcohol, Samantha.
Say it isn't so.
Okay. So 3 days after Tina disappeared, the police interviewed Tom at the lumberyard. They told him that he was a suspect and maybe they'd been having an affair, but he denied it. You know. And now there's like a little bit of the unsolved mysteries I can't read. So whatever. OSHA discovered that the forklift's parking brake was inoperable. They had previously fined the place for several safety infractions, which was also part of why they thought it was an accident. So they were saying, oh, the forklift could have rolled too slowly into the incline. Okay. So apparently the reason the investigators were saying this can't be an accident is because the forklift wouldn't really move that fast.
I don't feel like this was portrayed well in the episode, but maybe I just wasn't paying attention. That the forklift just like rolling, you would be able to get out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't just be like lying there going, oh my God, it's crushing me. Like you would move. So OSHA was saying like, look, this brake isn't, you know, up to snuff or whatever. It's not working how it's supposed to be. This place is not that safe. We find them before, it's probably an accident. And the investigators are kind of like, yeah, but why didn't Tom just like move out of the way? There's not like he didn't hit his head or something, right? Why wouldn't he just go, I don't want to get crushed by this forklift.
Right.
And they ended up reenacting the suicide using 2x4s to simulate Tom's body. I don't think that really is a equal comparison, but okay. I don't know that you
humans aren't a 2x4.
I don't know that you could just like put some wood somewhere and be like, that represents the body. Now whatever happens would be exactly the same. Oh my goodness, this is so long. Okay. So the coroner ruled the death a suicide thanks to this test and the fact that the forklift would like move slowly. From the beginning, Nancy disagreed with the ruling because she doesn't think that Tom would have left her and her children, and she would never believe that he committed suicide. But the thing is, you're watching this going, yeah, but Tom's a murderer. So like,
right.
Whatever. Nancy hired, which is his wife, hired an attorney and a private investigator to look into the death. And he did say, like, I don't think anybody would choose this type of death for themselves, which is kind of fair. Yeah, they did more tests, whatever. This clinical psychologist says that he didn't have suicidal behavior. Look, we don't know that. You don't know it, but
I mean, did anyone predict that he would murder someone?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Because there was no evidence to show that Tom felt guilty about Tina's disappearance or he was depressed enough to kill himself. But the thing is, folks, is when you get to the update, you find out that they later find Tina's body under a bunch of wood at the lumber yard. Yeah. So he absolutely killed Tina. And if he was still alive, he would have been prosecuted from her murder. And I don't think really anyone has any doubt that he did it except maybe his wife. So kind of my question was like, did someone find out it was him and kill him? Like, yeah. Maybe it wasn't an accident or suicide. Maybe someone was like, you killed Tina. I'm driving this forklift over you.
Interesting.
I just wonder.
Interesting.
Okay. So yeah, because Nancy is convinced that he was killed and that some unknown attacker in the lumberyard crushed him to death. And she wants the police to investigate more. And I sort of feel like the fact that he killed Tina is possible motive for killing him.
It certainly could be.
One lead was discovered that one of Tom's coworkers said that another coworker offered him $500 to break Tom's legs.
What?
Yeah, I don't remember that in the episode at all.
Because they just didn't like him or what?
The man said the same coworker later bragged about hitting Tom over the head and putting him under the forklift. Everybody hated this guy. Okay, but there was no drag marks or anything. The fact that he weighed 200 pounds is supposed to mean it would be difficult to put him under the forklift. I don't know, man. But the police do believe that Tom murdered Tina. They speculate that on the night she disappeared, he showed up unexpectedly outside leaving her office. He intentionally slashed her tire to keep her from leaving. The fact that he showed up right at that time is like the weirdest coincidence. It was probably planned. He was waiting for there when she got off work. I mean, and then you're like, well, why? Why did he kill Tina? And it seems to be that he had made some advances toward Tina. She was not interested. She had a long-term boyfriend. He's fucking married. She's like, no thanks. And he comes back to kill her. But he's dead, so.
Well.
He apparently told his wife several times that someone was trying to frame him from Tina's disappearance. I mean, why were you there? Why were you there in the middle of the night, Tom?
Who else would, like, what? I don't. Tom obviously did it.
I just like the sentence, according to her, he maintained his innocence until his death. Okay, that's 5 days. Yep. Wow. Really impressive. For 5 days, he was like, no, I didn't kill Tina.
Okay.
Well. Several friends and relatives say he was a quiet, thoughtful family man and overall, quote, nice guy.
There's evidence to the contrary, but that's fine.
This just keeps going, but I don't think there's like really any additional information. Okay, so now we get to the update. While Unsolved Mysteries was preparing to break the story, there was a major break, and that is that around noon on October 11th, 1995, a worker at Forest Products Distributor was using a piece of heavy equipment to move a pile of old scrap wood into a remote, rarely used back portion of the yard. When a few pieces fell off the pile, he went to pick them up, and he spotted the badly decomposed body in the pile of wood. Based on dental and medical records, along with clothing and other items, it was identified as Tina's. Like, who else would have put a body there? Seriously.
I mean, yeah.
An autopsy determined that she had been killed by blunt force trauma to the upper left side of her head. It is believed she was killed the day she disappeared. She was probably killed somewhere else and dumped there. 4.5 years after Tom's death, Nancy finally received her insurance death benefits, which you referred to, because the judge ruled there was not enough evidence to prove that Tom had committed suicide. Really, they just like couldn't figure out what happened one way or the other. Both cases are now considered closed. According to Tina's daughter, Tina's DNA was found to match the blood on Tom's shoes. Investigators told her that if Tom was alive, they would be charging him. But Tom, you are a dirtbag. I hope you are rotting in hell without any cold cokes. Shame on you. Poor Tina, man. She had to fucking work the late shift and then... God damn. Okay, let's move on.
Okay, so we have, is this a wanted? I think this is a wanted. This is the case of Ira Einhorn, who murdered Holly Maddox. So this one also might be kind of long. I was looking at the Unsolved Mysteries wiki, and the update is super fucking long, but okay. we'll see what we can do with this. So Ira Einhorn was a counterculture hero. During the 1960s in Philadelphia, he was the symbol of opposition to the war in Vietnam. In 1970, he organized Earth Day. So he was the inventor of Earth Day.
That's so weird that we still celebrate Earth Day. I mean, I know
because not, like, of this dude.
I've like considered more than once having like a wild Earth Day party just because I think that would be funny. But it falls too close to my birthday, which is why I've never done it. Where I'm like, oh God, actually, no, that's not going to happen. But now that seems really weird.
Yeah. Now that we know that this murderer invented Earth Day. So
go Earth, but not this dude.
He also, this says palled around with the peace movement superstars like Abbie Hoffman. He even ran for mayor of Philadelphia. However, there was a side of Ira Einhorn that the crowds and news cameras never saw. In private, he was a jealous, abusive, and self-centered man. And in 1979, he became the prime suspect in the disappearance of his one-time girlfriend, Holly Maddox. This is from author Stephen Levy, who says that Holly was seduced by Einhorn's charm. Quote, she was blown away because of the force of his personality. And on the other hand, there was Holly, who was really not at a solid stage in her life and was susceptible to his basically big personality, which was all a con. And within days, they were living together.
I love that we hear from a friend of Holly's who's like, yeah, he had a really high opinion of himself. And I don't know why, because I didn't find him attractive. And what an amazing thing to go on Unsolved Mysteries and say.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. She's a true friend.
This man thought that he was a gift to everyone. And I just really never got it. What a loser. Happy Earth Day, I guess. You're still ugly.
He really did. And like, it's clear that some people saw through this facade, but a lot of people thought that he was just this larger than life personality and this activist against the war and everything else. And it's like, well, in private, he was a huge dickhead and abused women and became a murderer.
I think that gets complicated because like his message is right. Like, he was right to to be against the war, and he is right to care about the environment, but he's using that for his own personal gains. So he's kind of hiding behind having like a correct speech or whatever.
Right.
But just, yeah, being an actual dick.
Well, and I feel like it must have been so much easier for him to hide his true character because, you know, I feel like today you could be outed on TikTok and Twitter in a hot second, and pretty soon, you know, it just takes one person to spill the tea, and now everybody knows.
Here's a video of Ira screaming at all of us because he's actually a huge narcissist,
right?
But, yeah,
but he, I think, was very successful in hiding his true character. So they moved in within a few days, but it did not take long before their relationship became abusive. We hear from Andrea Boyce, who worked with Holly at a neighborhood co-op. And she says that there was one morning where they were trying to get the store stocked. And while they were taking their break, she turned around in such a way that her friend Holly could see that there was a bruise on her neck, kind of like she had been strangled.
So sad.
So by July of 1977, Holly had decided that she was through. She needed to leave. She left Einhorn without even packing her bags. She ended up at a beach resort near New York City, where she began a romance with a man named Saul Lapidus, who describes her as wonderful, curious, and bright.
God. Saul
says for many weeks they were inseparable, and he thought that it was the start of something special and something, you know, he thought that they would probably be together for the rest of their lives. He just felt that she was a really important and special person. According to Joel Rosen, who was Philadelphia's assistant district attorney at the time, Einhorn went quote ballistic when he learned of Holly's new boyfriend. Einhorn called her in a rage. He said that he was like going off the walls. He threatened to throw all of her clothing and belongings out in the street unless she came to Philadelphia immediately to come see him.
Dude, let her go. Let her go. You didn't appreciate her and you didn't love her and you abused her.
No, and you were horrible to her. Yeah. But you know, narcissist, if he can't have her, no one can, sort of personality. Holly never returned to Philadelphia. Consequently, Saul Lapidus and some of Holly's other friends reported her absence to the authorities. According to Joel Rosen, detectives in Philadelphia were quick to interview Ira Einhorn when she went missing. His explanation was that he had gone into shower and that she was going to the store and then he never saw her again. She just walked off into the sunset.
Yeah, okay.
That's oh, I'm sorry. Real. I think I misspoke. She had gone to Philadelphia to collect her belongings and then but she never came back. My notes are sorry, kind of illegible. So she went to Philadelphia, but when she never came back, Saul and her friends reported her missing to the authorities. And yeah, his when questioned about it, Einhorn was like, yeah, I went and took a shower and she was just gone and I never saw her again.
I wasn't all worried about it though.
Yeah. So the Maddox family hired two former FBI investigators to investigate her, FBI agents, sorry, to investigate her disappearance. They underwent like a very rigorous investigation and they produced a report filled with hundreds of pages documenting dozens of interviews and very specific details about the events surrounding her disappearance. So the investigators located a couple who had gone to the movies with Ira and Holly during the weekend Holly went to pick up her belongings. It was the last time she was known to be alive. A few days later, Einhorn tried to convince friends to help him dump a large trunk in a nearby river. He said it was filled with secret Russian documents.
That is the worst cover story I've ever heard. First of all, where did that come from? Where did this trunk of Russian documents come from? And then,
why are you just shredding it or burning it?
Why do you... Maybe, I don't know, read them? There might be something important. Like, why do you have them? Why do you want to get rid of them?
Why are you doing it this way when it's paper?
Why is there a human-sized trunk?
Interesting. A lot of questions. So finally, the tenants of the apartment below Einhorn's told one of the investigators about choking stench, quote unquote, that was seeping into their apartment. That report brought Detective Michael Chitwood of the Philadelphia Police Department to Einhorn's apartment to investigate. And he says that once he opened the door, he could immediately smell the scent of decay. He had been a homicide detective for many years, and so he immediately knew what a decaying body smelled like. So obviously, this was obviously the body of Holly. So Einhorn came up with an explanation. He claimed the FBI and CIA had framed him by planting Holly's body in his closet.
Yep.
See, okay, this is the problem with the government doing shady shit, is that then it can be a smokescreen for terrible people. Right. They can just blame it on the government.
It's because I've spoken out against the Vietnam War and they're out to get me. And so obviously they murdered Holly and put her in my closet.
I mean, I think I would go like, why wouldn't they murder you? But
yeah,
like you're the problem, not Holly. But this is, yeah, God, God.
Yeah. So Einhorn was able to make bail. He was out on bail. This was frustrating to Detective Chitwood, but it is how the bail system works. However,
he seems very confused about that murderers sometimes get bail. I don't know, that happens, guy.
Yeah, I mean, the judge set a bail and he was able to make bail. Like, I don't know, I mean, our bail system is broken, but like, it's not a mystery that he was out on bail because he made bail. So, however, unfortunately, in January of 1981, 2 days before the start of his trial, Einhorn fled the country, which is probably a reason he shouldn't have had bail, because he like clearly had connections and means to flee, and he did. After 12 years of him being on the run, Philadelphia authorities tried Einhorn in absentia for the murder of Holly Maddox.
And it's unusual.
This is honestly one of the few times I've ever even heard of this. It took the jury 2 hours to find him guilty.
I shouldn't laugh because everything about this is so fucking sad, but that's quick. They were like, and part of that, I assume, was like, look, we have to make it look like we tried. That we don't want.
Yeah, right. You get like, lunch, okay, you know, you go back to
the bathroom. Yeah, like, let's go look at the vending machine. We don't want it to look like we put no thought into this, but
it takes at least an hour to sign the paperwork, right? And, you know, they're going to get you lunch anyway. You might as well, you know, eat, whatever, hang out, and then...
Yeah, get some hoagies, and then be like, oh, by the way, he's guilty, right? And everybody was like, yeah, obviously.
Right. So...
Fuck Earth Day, everybody said.
Do you want me to read this really long Unsolved Mysteries Wiki about this update? I don't know if they have more information. So, he was captured. After the broadcast, 65-year-old... I'm not going to be able to pronounce this. They're a Swedish viewer living in California. They contacted one of their relatives, who was a high-ranking Swedish police official, and asked them to look for information about Einhorn and this woman named Annika, who I think he was maybe like aided and abetted him. I can't remember. The official located this Annika woman's Swedish social security number and gave it to this person who was living in California, who then gave it to the authorities that were investigating or trying to find him. Oh my gosh, this is so convoluted. I'm not going to read all this.
Okay, good.
Hold, let me just scan it and see if there's anything that is like relevant. Oh my God, Unsolved Mystery. Okay, if you want to know how they caught Einhorn, Unsolved Mysteries Wiki has the most detailed explanation you've ever seen.
Yeah, pass. I'm just glad he's caught.
Yeah, they caught him. I think he died in prison. I would go into this update, but I kind of don't care. And also, we have three more mysteries to talk about, so.
Oh my God, this is going to be the longest episode ever. Okay, I have a really quick one, though. This is the disappearance of Jim Kimball. And it's extremely sad, so yay! Okay. Jim Kimball was from Oak Park, Illinois. He was the sixth child in a large, loving family. He was clearly, like, kind of shy, but his family... I like that they, and some mysteries is like, look, he was shy, but his family loved him anyway. Like, that's like this huge burden they had to overcome.
Everything in Jim's life changed August 16th, 1982, when his father suddenly died of a heart attack. Jim was just 13 at the time. Jim's family says that he seemed unaffected by the loss. Basically, he wasn't emoting the way that they expected him to. And so they started wondering, like, hey, what is up with Jim? And he was just very quiet and withdrew within himself, and they were kind of worried about him. And they believed that he was hiding his emotions. Now, I did not get this at all, but they have this reenactment. He's, like, playing the drums with his brothers. They had, like, started a band. And they, like, someone criticizes the way that he plays the drums, and then he just, like, stops and doesn't say anything. And then they were just like, well, we got it.
They were so mean to him.
I was like, yeah, he probably is just tired of your shit. I don't see this as, like, this mental break. They were like, and that was when he started to break. And I was like, I could not tell you how many times I acted like this when I was 13. Like, what are you talking about?
Also, they were like, shit, they were so shitty to him. They were like, earth to, you know, yeah. Come in,
hey,
come
Jim,
in.
Can't you even play the drum? You know, like, just yeah, like, shitty, well, way kids talk to each other. And he just, like, stopped playing and stopped talking and, you know, was upset. I was like, that seems like very normal, but okay, whatever. Apparently that was like, he angrily threw his drumsticks on, sat on the ground, concerned his family took him to the hospital. I feel like there's some information missing here, but I guess it's not really our business. So he met with a psychiatrist who diagnosed him with schizoaffective disorder, a mental disturbance characterized by unusual thoughts and mood swings. He told the psychiatrist that he was still angry about his father's death and also admitted to hearing voices. So he despite the fact that I swear everything they describe about his behavior doesn't seem that unusual to me, he was not well, and he required medication to help with his disorder. Over the next 8 years, he went to the hospital several times. He suffered relapses, but his family was, like, very supportive and there for him and, you know, tried to get him through it. He graduated from high school and he managed to hold down a few jobs. And he eventually moved to a halfway house about 10 miles from his mother's home. On Easter weekend in 1993, he showed up at his mother's house early. Everything seemed fine until the next day, April 13th, where Jim became frustrated that his family had gotten a new stereo system and he didn't know how it worked. And I also was like, this is also kind of relatable to me. He's tired. The tech is not teching, right? Like, he's just frustrated. He's like, fuck, you know, fuck this. But apparently he, like, threw a tantrum and, you know, was, like, throwing stuff over. And his brother came and tried to calm him down and was like, you know, like, hey, let's talk about it. I could show you how to use the stereo, whatever. And they had kind of an argument. And Jim was still angry, so he decided to leave and go for a walk. Unfortunately, he never returned. His family began to search for him. For 11 months, his family and the police searched without any success. In March of 94, a man fitting his description was found alongside the road in South Bend, Indiana. The policeman who found him thought he was drunk. So this was about 90 minutes from the Kimball home, and he lived nearby. The officer gave him a sobriety test, and when he wasn't drunk at all, just released him, because that's this country. Where he was like, wow, something is probably really wrong with this dude. He must be drunk. Oh, he's not drunk. On your way. Like, he didn't. Anyway. So a few weeks later, that officer saw a missing poster for Jim and went, oh, fuck, I think that guy was Jim. However, he's never seen again. There's literally no more information about this. It's extremely sad. His family clearly loved him, and I don't really understand what was going on with Jim. That's also kind of not really my business. I hope the Jim is, you know, thriving somewhere. Maybe he found people that, like, treated him better when he played the drums and he just hung out there.
I hope for that. Jim. Yeah.
It's a sad story.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, your last one.
There was no update? No. On the wiki?
Nope.
Damn.
Nope.
What's the fucking point of that then?
Unresolved. There's like a couple links. There is like nothing about this case. And he's just still missing. Hope you're out there, Jim.
Hope he has a good life.
Yeah, hope he's thriving somewhere.
Okay, so this one is also really quick. So this is I think a mysterious death is what I also didn't write it down.
Sorry. Podcasters.
How do I do this again? Okay. In late November 1994, just after 2 a.m., police respond to a silent alarm at the Duke and Duchess convenience store in Brimfield, Ohio. 3 minutes later, police arrive on the scene. They saw a man emerging from the store, but he was just an innocent bystander who had found the store unattended. Unfortunately, the store was not empty. In the back room, police found the body of the store clerk, 23-year-old Brian Fogath. He had been shot to death. Brian was not even scheduled to work this night. He was a last-minute replacement for another employee.
I know. My ghost would be so pissed.
Oh, 100%.
It's like, that wasn't even my shift.
And I had to go work at a fucking convenience store in the middle of the night?
I would be haunting that convenience store forever.
Ugh. So Brian Fogath's murder enraged the community. Finding his killer depends on a surveillance tape recorded during the crime. Okay, I forgot about this. Robert Stack spends a lot of time talking about the innovation that is surveillance
which is footage. Just like cameras.
The grainiest footage you've ever seen in your fucking life.
You get to see Robert Stack on a like security camera.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's pretty cool. He's standing in front of a row of two TVs. State of the art.
Yeah. State of the art, everybody.
Yeah, he's talking about how, you know, is this going to change police investigation as we know it? And I mean, kind of, but I don't know. Yeah, the technology had a ways to go at this point.
Not as well as I know it, but maybe as someone from like the 1800s knows it, yes.
you know, it's all about perspective.
A camera.
So there is surveillance footage from that night at the convenience store. The tape shows a masked man entering the store at 2:02 a.m. and forcing Brian at gunpoint into the back office. Chief Robert Burgess of the Brimfield Township Police Department is interviewed for the show and says that Brian cooperated. He went to the back with his hands raised. The gunman was right behind him. They spent approximately 60 seconds in the back room out of camera range. At 2:03 a.m., or 60 seconds, I'm not sure. What did I say? 60 seconds.
You said was right, Samantha.
At 2:03 a.m., the robber can be seen crouched behind the counter. At gunpoint, Brian empties the cash register. It is during this time that Brian triggers the silent alarm. At 2:04, a customer pulls up to the gas pump, automatically activating a beeper inside of the office. Police believe that to the gunman, it may have sounded like an alarm.
I find that very plausible, actually.
Same, because he was getting all the money. Like, why do you need to kill Brian? Yeah, so
they did it in the reenactment too. Like, what the sound? I'm guessing it's, you know, it's fairly accurate. Like, what the sound of the pumps would be that you could mistake for alarm. And I was like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, for sure. Same. So Chief Burgess suspects that the robber panicked and pushed Brian onto the floor of the back room. As they scuffled over the gun, Brian was killed instantly by a single bullet. It happened just 3 minutes after the robber entered the store. According to Chief Burgess, the customer was just a few feet away when the killing occurred. Weirdly, the customer didn't hear the gunshot, but maybe you're not expecting to hear a gunshot. I don't know. He didn't see anything. He was standing outside in front of the gas pumps the entire time. Police believe that the killer was a white male aged 18 to 30, about 5'9". The suspect may have had head or facial injuries around that time, a result of the struggle with Brian.
Vaguest description.
Police observed what appears to be a hump on the robber's back, which...
Okay, I didn't remember that.
You can kind of tell in the footage, but it's very blurry, and I feel like it could be anything.
Like a hood, maybe.
I don't know. They thought it could be something concealed, or maybe a ponytail? Look, the footage is very grainy. I don't know how you would ever...
Or was it the Hunchback of Notre Dame?
Maybe.
Did anyone look into that?
I was going to look up an Unsolved Mysteries wiki. There wasn't an update in the episode, I don't think. Brian Fogath. What was sad about this case, too, is that everything happened so fast, and the police got there really quickly. Like, after the silent alarm tripped, I forget exactly how long it... But it, like, didn't take them long at all to get there, but he was already dead.
Yeah.
It's very sad. There's no update, so I don't know. Fucking know why we're talking about this either.
Please don't kill people while they're just trying to work at convenience stores. They don't care.
He was giving you the money. Like,
they will give you the money. They do not care. Sure. That is not their money. And even if it was, they'd probably still give it to you. Like, don't do that.
This person got away with it. It fucking sucks.
It really does. God, this episode is a downer.
Yeah, I'm looking at still images of the footage from Unsolved Mysteries Wiki.
It is just a pile of pixels. Man,
and he's wearing a ski mask. Like, you cannot fucking tell who this person is. I don't know what Robert Stack is talking about. No one's going to be able to identify this man.
I watched The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix recently, which was so fun. But, I mean, it's very dark, but it's also very fun. But my favorite part of it is there is a part where they're looking at much better security camera footage, because it's, like, in the present day. And the, you know, Frank Usher character just keeps going, enhance, enhance. And people are like, that's not a thing. You can't, like, that's, the, you know, I just keep thinking about that. It's like, he was like, it works on TV. And they're like, that's not a thing. And then he's like, why don't we have sound? And they're like, it's a security camera. Like, what? Very funny. Yeah, that sucks. Okay, we have one last case. This is a ghost. I think in any other episode or maybe any other time, I would be excited about this case. And my heart is just not in it. Maybe we can come back to it sometime. I don't know. This is the mystery of Covewood Lodge. And it is an interesting story. Covewood Lodge is located in Eagle Bay, New York. It is an upstate New York lake resort that has like little cottages that you could rent, you know, get away from it all. And this involves a murder that takes place in 1906 and then ghost sightings that take place in 1988. So the Covewood Lodge is a vacation spot on Big Moose Lake. Several of its employees believe that it's haunted. We hear stories about walking into the lodge and going up the stairs, and you would just like, so someone is like going up the stairs, they're reaching out for the string to turn on the light, and as I approach the top of the stairs, she says, just before I am ready to turn on the light, I feel a feeling came over me that someone was right there. More or less, I stopped in my tracks and I didn't really move. I didn't have an overwhelming feeling of fright, just that someone or something was definitely there, and it kind of took my breath away. That is one of the worst ghost stories I've ever heard. Sorry. I was working by myself late at night and I got creeped out. All right. Thank you. But this one's much better. At the same time, three of her friends were watching a spectral woman on the second floor from outside the cabin. It just lingered for a few seconds and then moved away. I didn't see anything myself, but I felt like there was someone standing right there. Okay, so people believe that this is the ghost of Grace Brown, whose brutal murder in 1906 shocked the nation. She was murdered at the Covewood Lodge by her would-be lover, who has the most, like, old-timey murderer name, Chester Gillette.
Okay, yeah.
It just is like, I don't, if you wrote a terrible knockoff of The Great Gatsby, you'd be like, oh, I can't call my character Jay Gatsby. I guess I have to call him Chester Gillette. Anyway, and people have seen her or this apparition several times since the murder. So employee Linda Mackin had her own encounter with Grace's ghost a few months before this light switch thing, which is absolutely nothing. She says she was walking down towards the lake with her flashlight, and the lake kept getting dimmer and dimmer. And by the time she got to the edge of the lake, the flashlight wouldn't work at all. And then, so she's looking out. Hold on here. And she like sees this apparition over the water. She was certain that she was looking at a ghost, and she said she had a very strong feeling of sadness, not like fear.
Okay.
So the background on this is that Grace was murdered at the lodge in July 1906 by her suitor, Gillette. Grace was 19 years old. She was an employee at his skirt factory in Cortland, New York. And that's where she met him, working for him. His uncle owned the company. He never took her out in public because he refused to acknowledge their relationship because he was just really one hell of a guy. So they would see each other secretly. Because also he was also, you know, around town, like more visibly courting women of the same economic class, right? But of course, poor, naive young Grace thought that he was really in love with her. So when she turned out to be pregnant, she begged Galette to marry her. And one day he takes her to the lake and comes back by himself. When her body was found the next day near a capsized boat, he at first said that he didn't even know who she was, but that was a really bad lie, and the truth came out quickly, and he was slandered by the press. It was like a big media event. He was tried and convicted of first-degree murder on March 30th, 1908, and he actually died in the electric chair.
Oh.
Decades later, Hollywood turned this into a hit film. Which was called A Place in the Sun. I like that Unsolved Mysteries more than once points out that this film, I think there was also a novel inspired by this case, is very unflattering to Grace, who is not only the victim, but like literally didn't do anything wrong at all.
Yeah.
They want to portray her as this like hussy or this like immoral woman. So she's like this like really nagging in the film, I guess. So that you're like, well, a guy, Galette did what he had to do. Or I don't know. I don't even, supposedly the movie is very sympathetic to him, but I'm sitting here going, how?
I cannot imagine how that's possible.
He murdered his mistress for getting pregnant after he banged her. Like, what is
Oh my God.
It's kind of interesting that that movie has Elizabeth Taylor in it as, not as Grace, as like one of the like more reputable women he's courting, and
interesting.
Yes, so you're gonna hear Robert Stack talk about beautiful young Elizabeth Taylor, and then you're gonna go, I know you had a threesome with her. Which, look, is that only in one Elizabeth Taylor biography? I guess, but am I going to believe that till the day that I die? Absolutely, yes. You cannot, unless you were in that threesome and it was actually a foursome, you cannot prove to me that that did not happen.
Fact.
Okay. So yeah, Unsolved Mysteries wiki ends with A Place in the Sun, which was the name of that film, with Grace unrealistically depicted as an unattractive nag.
God.
Yeah. So the novel I was thinking of is called An American Tragedy. And I guess that's also like not sympathetic to her at all, which again, how? What? Okay, whatever. I wish the ghost stories were like spookier for that one, because it's an interesting case, but the ghost story, and I was so happy we finally got a ghost story. It's been a long time, but then the ghost stories were kind of like, we just assume there's a ghost here. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. I believe it. It seems like a quaint place. I kind of like to visit.
Yeah. Maybe we should go say hi to Grace. I guess people did literally see like a full body apparition over the water. It just wasn't a very good story. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. Oh my God. Let's wrap this up. Let's rate it and let's be done.
Okay. Let's see. So what my is brain it? Is mush. Mysteriousness. Our categories.
I'm gonna go with very mysterious. A lot of these motherfuckers were never caught. Is this ghost real? I don't know. What happened to Jim? I don't know. Yeah, it's mysterious.
It's mysterious. I will give it a thumbs up for that. Reenactments.
I even wrote down that the one of the reenactments from my first case, from Tom's case, like when I saw the reenactor, I was like, wow, that facial hair is like, you know, Spirit Halloween level. Why did they do that? And then they showed the actual guy and I was like, whoa, actually that's real accurate. That's actually like how his facial hair looked. So I'm going to say based just on that they were good.
I think so. Yeah, that's some solid casting.
Yeah, the casting was good. The ghost CGI is like fine. You know, it's like probably better than you would expect it to be on Unsolved Mysteries from this era. It's, you know, you're not going to be creeped out or anything, but it's not like hilariously bad. So let's give it a thumbs up.
It was pretty good. Fashion?
Unremarkable.
I don't remember anything about the fashion, to be honest.
Even though we have this case from like 1908 and you see some clothes from that, I don't know, it's nothing just like not great.
That spectacular. Nothing really stood out. I feel like I want to give Robert Stack a thumbs up because he stood in front of some tube TVs and talked about video surveillance.
Like
I don't know if the bar is low for him or what, but I do think he deserves a thumbs up.
I think so too. We see him in the call center.
Yeah. He didn't outsource his job to some correspondent.
Yeah. He's at the end, he says the word perhaps a lot, which I felt like was a plug for our show, because he's like, well, perhaps the ghost does this.
Oh, it was.
Perhaps
it
was. That. Perhaps blah, blah. And I was like, because you want people to listen to it, perhaps it's you. So thumbs up.
On our Robert Stack scale, I don't know. I feel like I'm gonna forget about this episode immediately.
I feel like I already have. I want to like it more.
These aren't even solved, so I don't even like.
I want to like it more, and I realize it's really just because of the ghost and because that case with Murderer Tom is kind of wild. It's kind of wild that you have his unsolved death and then you go, oh fuck, that guy's a murderer. Like, it should have, you know, it could be told in this way where you're like really sympathetic to Tom and you're like, oh no, what happened to him? And then you go, oh wait, he's a murderer, I don't give a fuck. So that's kind of interesting, but it feels long. The episode drags.
I think maybe it's because we're not used to getting five mysteries, I don't know. But yeah, this episode kind of dragged. I'm not sure that it's just a forgettable one. I'm not going to remember it. And so I feel like it's like 2.5.
Okay. I was going to say 3. So
okay,
that's, well, you know, whatever
it's
you want.
It's somewhere in there.
Listen to your heart and you'll know what you rate it when you watch it. And then you'll go, wow, I don't remember anything about that anymore. And that was really sad. And there was a lot of really unnecessary violence towards women, obviously, like every episode.
Yeah.
But there was a ghost. I don't know. Man, my heart's not in it, clearly. We are not going to do a found loves this week.
Oh, I had a found love.
Oh, okay.
Unless you don't want me to talk about it, which is fine.
Well, I was just going to say it's been really long, but do it.
Well, I'll make it fast because I do want to talk about this because I think it's hilarious and it's been a bright spot in my day, which is, have you, okay, so this is hyper local. I'm sorry, but I think, we talk about all kinds of hyper local things, so whatever. have you seen the submissions for the new Minnesota state flag redesign?
Oh, I haven't. No.
Okay.
I didn't know that was a thing, but I haven't like looked at the designs.
So if you aren't from Minnesota, you may not know that Minnesota is redesigning our state flag. We have one of those state flags where there's like a state seal on a blue background. I would
give it a 1, Robert Stack, because it's got so much going on.
It's and busy.
When that flag is flapping in the breeze, you cannot see one detail of that. No. There's like a guy, I think there's like a settler with a corn and a something in Latin. And there's just too much.
It's terrible. So Minnesota decided to put out a call for citizens to design. You could submit up to 3. Each person could submit up to 3 designs. And boy, oh boy, did people submit a lot of designs. So I saw, I'm a little confused. Oh, so the submissions have been released today. I don't think there's a voting. I think there's a committee that's going to pick. It's probably a good thing because we are the state that has done popularity contest for naming snowplows every year, and it's how we end up with snowplows named Plowy McPlowface. So
we have a plow named Plowy McPlowplow or whatever. Plowy McPlowface.
So, which, you know, I mean, that's a lot to take in if you're not from Minnesota, that we name our snowplows and there's a competition and we routinely name them things like Plowy McPlowface. But like, all this to say, we should not probably be voting on our state flag.
Can I hear my idea for the state flag?
Yeah, I absolutely do.
I don't have like, I'm not a, you know, graphic design is my passion and I don't have any graphic design skills, so.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about the submissions. I don't think you needed them.
I want it to be like a lighter blue background, like a sky blue background.
Okay.
Where it's half a sun and half a snowflake. Like there's a circle in the middle.
Oh, I like that.
Beams of sun coming out, one's half, and then the like snowflake branch fractal things coming off one half, and that is Minnesota to me.
I kind of love it. So you can see all the submissions. The website is mnhs.org/flags, or you can also Google it.
I'm gonna look right now.
There are, okay, this is what I'm a little confused about, is when I looked at into this before the submissions were available to view, everyone said, all the news outlets said, that there were so many submissions that the committee was going through them and paring them down. And I do not understand how this is the pared down list, because the some of these submissions are completely absurd. There is one that is literally a picture of someone's dog.
Okay, I'm looking at something that Minnesota Public Radio put together. Okay. And it's perhaps not as wild as that.
There are so many of loons with lasers shooting out of their eyes. So many. I can't believe that many people had that same idea.
I'm seeing one that just is a casserole, a
hat. Oh, yes. A state seal, but it's just the border of the seal, and in the middle is a tater tot hot dish.
One that's clearly drawn by a child that says Land of 10,000 Lakes, Minnesota, and that just has a star and like one tree. But it's just like scribbled in crayon.
Yes, there are many that are clearly submitted by children. There is one that has been going around a lot that is the California flag, exactly, except it says Minnesota Republic, and instead of a bear, it's a mosquito.
Okay. This one is just a smiley face, a star, and it's a child writing the word Minnesota. That's pretty good.
There's a lot of stars because the state nickname is the Star of the North. So there's a lot that have feature stars. There are some legitimately good ones. My personal favorite is number 479. I think that one is really well done. I'm rooting for that one.
Okay, I'm looking at a loon that's literally lasering a fish. you're right to recommend this. This is amazing.
I just think you should take a look at them. There's so many. I cannot believe, like, if this is the pared down list, I really want to see the ones that did not make the cut, because some of these are so bad. Many of them are just clip art.
Well, yeah.
Which is amazing. So hilarious. Obviously, you can tell there are some that are like very well done. There's a whole concept.
The loon laser. Okay, there's no way they're gonna pick a funny one, but
I mean, no, definitely not. But
there's some nice. I wouldn't mind a loon. There's some nice. Okay, there's a lot of loons. Literally just the California flag with nothing changed. That's hilarious.
I like. There's a few that have this sort of like swooping okay, landscape. That's
just a picture of someone's dog.
I mean, okay, we were talking about this at work today, and we have dubbed that one the good boy flag, and I am rooting for the good boy flag. There's a lot that feature snow. I feel like I'm looking at one that's kind of a snowflake. I'm looking at a few that have like a swoopy landscape motif with a star above it, which I think is kind of cool.
There's a few that have a like Northern Lights kind of theme. I like that. I would actually really love it if we picked one of these ones like hand drawn by a child. Oh, this one is like a Bigfoot going surfing.
Oh, okay.
And look for submission.
Don't really understand that one, but
look for submission F 1960.
1960. Okay, that one is really good. That's better than I expected.
It is good. Okay, do you think we could do my color? It's probably too late to submit anything, but I should have done my coloring sheet of Jazz Loon.
You 100% said that in.
I failed. I'm so sorry.
Okay, is the one that's basically Minnesota, but it's the Teletubby sun with a psychedelic background? I don't know what number it is. Okay, look up 253. Oh, and I apologize. If you are on the actual website for the state emblems redesign, there is a search, so this would make it easier, but
oh. That's a nightmare.
It's very bizarre. I'm not sure
I don't like
what it. Fever dream that came out of the person who
I do not like it. I do not approve. Wow, okay. You know, this is a very creative place. People have a lot of creative energy, and I'm glad the state supports them in expressing that. And so we end up with, yeah, laser loons.
I would love to hear people's favorites, like your legitimate favorite and then your funny favorite. But there are so many. There's 22 pages of submissions. I have not seen them all.
F-124 looks a little vaginal to me.
Okay, is this a lady slipper? There's a lot of lady slippers, and they look a little suspect.
There's like a landscape, but I don't understand what is in the foreground.
What is that?
I don't know.
I think it's a vagina.
I don't think it's supposed to be, but that's all that I see.
Well, I don't think that one's getting picked.
I don't. Sometimes other people don't interpret things that way, though.
Well, maybe that's
we'll
true.
Maybe we'll have a very vaginal flag.
Yeah, I would be fine with it.
Yeah. I'm really, really amused by the one that's literally just the California flag. It's like California Republic on it. So that's very, very funny.
I don't really understand.
Oh my God. Who submitted the don't tread on me flag? I'm going to fight you. Yeah, I'm not going to tread on you. I'm going to punch you. It's a difference.
I think some people were mad that Minnesota's like gone woke or whatever. And so I'm sure that's
the flag
what a lot
sucks.
Of
it has nothing to do with like.
It actually doesn't. It's just like literally a bad flag.
It's just a bad design. They're like, we could do better. Okay, this is just a picture of the American flag, like literally with the sky in the background and everything.
This is why I can't. This cannot be the curated list. I do not understand.
Some of these are just like bad snapshots and stuff. Yeah. I've seen a lot of snowflakes and stuff. No one has exactly what I was describing, which is, you know, just an idea in my mind. But I'm kind of surprised no one else thought that. Yeah, there's a loon with a star for an eye. I don't know about that. It's a little creepy.
Yeah, not a fan of that one. It's hilarious to me that there are so many loons with laser eyes. So there's more than three.
That kind of suggests we should pick that then, right?
I think so, to be honest.
The will of the people. I don't want it to be two oars. Not all of us are boating around.
I agree.
That doesn't represent me, two oars. Okay, someone literally just the flag we already have.
There are more bad ones than good ones.
I'm surprised by some of the good ones. Some of the good ones are very, very good. And I would be happy if those were the flag. Some of them are like scribbled in marker and also, okay, no, not this gray duck thing. That's stupid. No.
Okay. There is a duck, duck, gray duck one. I saw that one.
This is a good recommendation, Samantha, because these are pretty funny. I'm not seeing anything as unhinged as the winner of that I voted sticker contest. That's like head with spider legs coming out of it.
This is why we can't do a vote.
But
end up with that dog, that person's dog as our flag.
I kind of want something as weird as the I voted head, which is, I think, really sums up how we all feel about voting at this point. So maybe it should just be like a kid's scribble of a loon, call it a day.
Yeah.
So funny. I mean, yeah, the flags objectively sucks. It's ugly and you can't read it. It like defeats the point of a flag.
There is also a user submitted a citizen submitted competition for redesigning our state seal. I haven't found any of those to be quite as funny as the flag, but...
Maybe we'll just get that flag Bart Simpson design that said learn to fart state or something. We'll just have that. I'm surprised nobody submitted that.
I mean, I haven't looked at every page. Someone may have.
You know what? You're right.
There's 22 pages to go through.
I'm cruising through. I'm trying to see if there's any, you know, really funny loon ones. Obviously. But oh, here's just like a drawing that has like a horse and some other stuff going on. Sure.
674 is another laser loon.
674.
It was clearly drawn in Microsoft Paint.
Okay, that's I want that one. Yes. It's just a loon zapping. It's zapping nothing though. I want it to be zapping something.
Okay, well, there is the one that is zapping the loon zapping the fish with its eye lasers. So we could do that.
The loon is just zapping the water. I guess to try to warm it up.
Oh, yeah.
It's cold.
Yeah.
Making up a whole story for it. All right, everyone. I think that's going to be the end of this episode. Sorry.
It was a very weird episode.
Very weird episode. I'm sorry. It was such a downer, but man.
Oh, well.
We're trying our best. It's whatever that is.
We recorded an episode. I'm not sure. What else do you want?
And it's long as fuck, so there's that.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? Sign up for our Patreon or don't. And
We should maybe plug some stuff. Yeah, if you want some bonus content, head over to Patreon.
We have so many bonus episodes. There's so many coloring sheets by now. There's like 80-some coloring. It's ridiculous.
It is a lot. What are we recording this month for Patreon? We haven't decided
yet. I have an idea, but I haven't told you.
Okay, cool.
So we have a surprise. It'll be a surprise. And blah, blah, blah. I don't know. If you have a spooky story, a listener story, you want to send that in?
Ooh, yeah, we haven't gotten a spooky story in a while.
@gmail.com. And could you just cheer us up by leaving us a 5-star review? Goddamn. Go to the Apple store. Ask to borrow a phone. Use it. Leave a review. Leave. Please. Please. I think that's it.
All right. Well, all right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, my dear. Keep barking, everyone. Hope all your mysteries are... Oh, may all your mysteries be solved. Yeah.